I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. It's only January, but already the crystal balls and the knives are out in Washington as Republicans and Democrats gear up for one of the most high-stakes midterm elections in years. Well, this should be a year where Democrats have the advantage. Traditionally, the party of the president suffers during first-term midterm elections, but with President Bush's approval rates at historic highs, Republicans are betting they can buck that trend. Now, while plans are still being drafted, it's clear that the battleground has been chosen. Unemployment and stimulus, tax cuts and consumer confidence. It's the economy. President Bush and Majority Leader Daschle have already fired the first shots, both back tax relief, but they're shooting at very different targets. Connection listeners, put on your own campaign strategist hat. Economic and political spin are in this hour. What are the proper rules of engagement in 2002? And will the GOP translate presidential popularity into a legislative rout come November? Or might the Democrats reclaim the mantle of fiscal responsibility that served them so well during the Clinton years? Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. You can, of course, join us online at theconnection.org. My guests this hour are Alexis Simondinger. She's the White House correspondent for the National Journal. Ed Goas is a Republican pollster and campaign strategist. The two of them are in a studio in Washington. And joining us on the phone from Seattle, Mark Penn. He's a Democratic campaign strategist. Alexis, I want to begin with you because we always talk about the economy as being the political battleground at this point. Is that because there's really no other place for the fight to take place?
Well, in Washington, in the beginning of a congressional year, traditionally you're talking about the president's presentation of the budget. That's traditional.
Right.
And the response in Congress and what they're going to do with it. And in the beginning of the second year, it really of a presidency, it really is the first year in which a president actually gets to put together all of the I's and cross the T's of a budget presentation in this year it will be the first full Bush budget. And last year, of course, he had a lot of holdover policies and a very short time period after the election month to put together a budget. So traditionally, we end up talking about domestic policy as it's framed by the budget, and there's nothing unusual about that as being the foundation for this year's political debate in entering an election year. What is different is the overlay of the war and the president's very substantial support by the American people.
And the overlay that the country is in a recession.
Well,
I mean, that makes the economy something that's more in people's minds, right?
Economic recession, of course, in budget debate is not unknown, but we have been in previously 9 years of prosperity. So what is unusual, of course, is the economic conditions we're in. What Ed and probably Mark can tell you about is whether the American people believe that we're really in recession and are feeling and acting as if we are. One of the things economists talk a lot about, and I'm not an economist, is the lag in the public's appreciation for economic circumstances. And the public really didn't have a chance to catch its breath and embrace the idea of surplus, living in a era of surplus, that seemed to last about 20 minutes. And so their appreciation of dire fiscal circumstances, I think, historically is probably more honed than their appreciation of surplus politics.
Ed Goas, how do you see it? Do you see the strategists, people like yourself, saying, gee, we think the economy is the place where we want to fight this particular midterm election year, or is the public, are the polls telling folks like you that's the area that people want to hear from their politicians on?
Well, the economy and jobs is always going to be a major issue in any campaign. I think it tends to be, particularly in non-presidential years, more than ever, because there's more of a focus on local versus national politics, and the jobs issue always bubbles up from the bottom up. But I think clearly with being in a recession since March, it has brought that to the forefront. We saw a period of time after September 11th where the major focus of the voters was on terrorism and terrorists, but we've begun to see that fade. As that has faded, we've seen the economy surface even more as an issue, along with Social Security and education. So I think from a political strategist standpoint, the one thing that we understand very well is that normally the American public will not say you're out of a recession for 6 to 9 months after you're actually out of that recession. So all assumptions are at this point we'll be running the elections of 2002 in a recession mentality.
Step back from the issues for us, if you can, for a minute, Ed, and explain why this midterm election year is so key.
Well, I mean, obviously, you have very close margins in both the House and the Senate, with the Democrats having a one-vote advantage in the Senate and the Republicans having a 7 or 8 seat. I forget exactly what it is with the specials going on. Advantage in the House of Representatives. I think clearly there's been a battle that began 20 years ago in Washington over what the role of government is and the balance between government and individuals, which very often the tax debate is core in kind of defining that role of government. And I think this year's election will be no different in kind of furthering that debate.
Mark Penn, maybe I can get you to give us your perspective on what we're supposed to expect in a presidential first-term, midterm election. This should be a year for the Democrats. Are you in trouble already?
No, I mean, I think when you look at the situation, you know, all of the polls show that obviously Bush's approval rating, you know, has moved up to the high 80s, but, you know, in a poll we just did, 71% gave Democrats the highest approval rating that they've ever had. So they've also been equally approving of the way Democrats have operated, and two-thirds say that they want a Congress that's a check on Bush, not a Congress that would vote down the line with his policies. And, you know, when you look at the what's happened here, in the last year there have been some dramatic changes. Right track on the economy went from 71% during the Clinton administration down to 45-47% now. 62% in our latest poll say that we're in a recession. And frankly, most people didn't realize that we've slipped into deficit, and the president confirmed that yesterday. So there are some big issues here. Has the president managed the national budget properly? Because we've gone from the largest surplus now to a deficit so quickly. And second, has he managed the economy properly? Because we've gone from the strongest economy in generations into a relatively weak economy.
But let's go back to the simple fact that you pointed out at the beginning, that his own approval ratings are up in the 80s. So when a president like that can say, as he did in a speech, you know, America, like me, is tired of partisan bickering. We ought to come together. We ought to unify. It makes it harder for the opposition party to start pecking away, doesn't it?
Well, the evidence we have here in Virginia and New Jersey is that it's not a matter of pecking away. It's a matter of Democrats standing for what they believe will do right for people, do right for the economy. Democrats have been the party of the new economy for the last decade. They've known how to manage it, how to keep interest rates low, how to manage the budgets. And just, you know, joining that fight as they did in the couple of states here where you had elections showed that Democrats could and did win. And so there's no evidence that the president's international foreign policy, you know, success is going to translate to domestic legislative or gubernatorial success.
Ed Goes, what can you tell us about the feedback you're getting on the management skills of the Democrats compared to Republicans at this point?
Well, we're not getting quite as high a rating as what was just reported. We're seeing job approval of Democrats in Congress over 50%, which is historically a good reaction. But we're also seeing job approval of Republicans, almost 60% of Republicans in Congress. I think going back to the president's job approval rating, first of all, something that is missed in the mix, because very often they like to compare his job approval to his father's and how quickly he came down. I mean, clearly the war against terrorism as a result of what happened on September 11th is not the Gulf War, and his job approval numbers are not his father's. His father hit almost 80% in job approval, but never had more than a 40% strongly approve, where Bush at 85% job approval has 60% strongly approve of the job he's doing, 70% approval on the economy. In terms of the economic debate, I think we'll welcome that debate coming. If you look at the management of the economy, that if you look at the surplus that was there at the beginning of the year, the recession reduced the surplus by $167 billion. New spending has reduced the surplus by $60 billion. And the tax cut only reduced revenues by $38 billion. So it's not the Bush tax plan that caused this new tightening. It's the recession and it's the war against terrorism that has occurred out there. And in fact, if you look at the nearly $40 billion that was put into the economy from the tax cut or about the time of September 11th, most economists believe that, in fact, that action would have brought us out of the recession. I think the thing that the Democrats seem to be missing here is that it's not a surplus that creates a good economy. It's a good economy that creates a surplus. And I think that's what we have to focus on and get back to through economic security.
Alexis, come back with a look at the numbers that we're hearing from our pollsters here in terms of whether or not it's in any way too early to be making strategy decisions based on the approval rating of both Democrats and the president.
If you listen to economists, they talk about how nervous they are about making predictions about what will happen to the economy, and they tend to make those predictions based on what they know from history, and that tends to be the same I've learned with political prognosticators, too. You tend to look back in order to look forward. And President Bush and his aides, as well as Senator Daschle and the Democrats, are each making a bet, and that is that they can persuade the American public each of something that is contrary. Bush is hoping that looking back at his tax cut is not going to resonate with anyone in the American public, that they're going to be grateful for his stewardship as well as his investments in security. Senator Daschle and the Democrats are hoping that they can look back at the tax cuts and President Bush's policies, not him as a person, but his policies, and persuade the American public that it was folly and that Democrats should be trusted with policies that relate to fiscal responsibility. And each of them is pinning that based on historical experience. The problem, and Ed and Mark can talk about this more astutely, but I think the problem with that is that you're asking the American public to, in terms of the Democrats, reject a position that they were complicit in. They were eager to get the tax breaks, and Democrats voted for them. And looking backward may not be profitable for the Democrats, but looking forward in terms of the kind of programs that the American public consistently says that they want to support, whether that's prescription drugs or Social Security or education, looking forward may be the terrain the Democrats have the most traction with. And that, I think, is where President Bush is going to face some real stress this year, because I doubt that he'll be blamed for the tax cut, but it's looking forward that will be difficult for him. Ed talked about his father. It took 25 months for his father to get to the high approval ratings that his son is experiencing right away. It also took 25 months for that to evaporate.
All right. Connection listeners, our number is 1-800-423-8255. We'll come back and talk more about looking forward and looking back and whether or not a public eager for the tax breaks is also willing to give them up. 1-800-423-8255. You're listening to The Connection on National Public Radio.
223 degrees.
You're listening to The Connection on National Public Radio. My name is Dick Gordon. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. And, you know, we're just in the first few days of a midterm election year, and already we're talking about what the strategies are, what the strategy should be. What do you want to hear from the parties? What's going to change your mind? What's going to confirm your vote? even this early in the year? Or what would you like to tell the pollsters about the way that the different parties are designing the campaign based on what we know so far? 1-800-423-8255. I have three guests this hour. Alexis Simondinger is a White House correspondent with the National Journal. Ed Gohuis is a Republican strategist. And Mark Penn is a strategist with the Democratic Party. Mark, Ed said a couple of minutes ago that when you have an economic argument between the parties, things tend to filter down to the local level. So when you take that great chunk of popularity that Bush carries around with him, does that work for the opposition or against the opposition when the conversation turns to layoffs at the local car plant or hotel?
Well, I guess what we're saying, though, is that it works. You know, as the conversation is turning more and more to layoffs and to a stressed economy, that is likely to work against Bush. The real question about Bush is, does he have an economic plan? You know, he had a tax cut that he put in that was really was something he devised during times of prosperity. Does he understand the new economy? Does he have any kind of economic plan? That's the real issue. I think that he's tried to distort what Democrats have said. Democrats did not say repeal the tax cut. Quite the opposite. Democrats have some real stimulus tax cuts that they would propose. What they said was, you know, this came at a time that it kept long-term interest rates up. When Wall Street looked at the huge size of the tax cut in the future, so that long-term interest rates have been kept up, and that's probably, you know, added rather than helped the economy. And it's really time to focus on now what kind of economic problems we have. They seem to be
But Ed, do you think that Ed, do you think the voters are finding that difference between Daschle's proposals on tax credits and Bush's proposals on tax cuts? It's a hard piece to parse out at this point.
Well, it is, and it's sometimes very hard to do in polling. However, NBC News, Wall Street Journal recently asked a question where they posed the two policies, and by 59-29, voters said that they preferred the president's policy in terms of tax cuts as opposed to targeted tax credits and increased government spending. I think going back to something Mark said, it kind of shows kind of the box that the Democrats are in. When on one hand they're trying to greatly criticize the president's tax cut proposal, even though they had 12 senators vote for it and they had 41 members of the House vote for it, but they're stopping short of saying repeal it because they don't want to be tagged as being for higher taxes. So they're trying to get an edge in terms of the campaign, but they're not going that extra step in terms of what they're trying to imply by going after the president's tax cut.
Well, but what's happening
and I
here,
think that puts them in a bind.
I
think
here,
going back to your earlier comment about local, I think where Bush and the Bush administration has done a very good job of both focusing on the war and focusing on the economy, and we could talk all day about whether or not he has an economic policy. I think the bigger problem is for those members of Congress and senators and even governors who are running that. It's much harder for them in their at a lower capacity to keep a focus on what they are doing on the economy and what they are fighting for. So you could see many of them fall into the trap that while they're seen as doing a very good job of supporting the president and the country in terms of the war on terrorism, they are kind of losing the ability to get out there and also talk about and get attention for those things that they are individually working on.
Mark, you wanted to get back in
economies.
Yeah, I mean, also what's happening here is the president's trying to, I think, sweep under the rug with some of this rhetoric that he has put the country back into deficit, that we've swung from a surplus to a deficit, and what's the right kind of policies of fiscal responsibility when you have a deficit? Most people will understand, probably not today, but by the time we get to the election, that there is a deficit, that the surplus has been mismanaged, that they really want, and that if things were left to Republicans in Congress, let's put the president aside for a minute, because remember, the president's not on the ballot in 2002. And Republicans typically would have cut taxes more. They would have been less generous to education. Typically, if you look at the policies that Republicans in Congress would have wanted, frankly, they would have been more extreme than the American public wants. And they're going to be looking during a recession here for Democrats to be a check on Bush, particularly when he's put the country in deficits And, you know, once the country's in deficits, it's not too long before Republicans start to look at cutting Social Security, Medicare, education, and all the other things they tried to cut during the Gingrich years. I think you're going to see a lot of that return, and they're going to need Democrats to defend against that.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255. George is joining us from Carrboro, North Carolina. Hi, George.
Hi.
Go ahead.
My comment was, you know, similar to the person that just spoke. I think if President Bush would apply the same vigor to something that he promised, like the prescription drug plan that he applies to war on terrorism, he might be able to retain his high approval ratings. But, you know, he has made a lot of promises on addressing social needs, particularly for the elderly. But, you know, there's not a lot of vigor, and there are not a lot of programs coming out on that. Health care, and particularly health care for the elderly, is still a major problem in this country. It's a major economic and social problem. Similarly, I think the education program is fine, but a lot of people look at it and say, you know, the Democrat idea, we don't need more testing. What we need is higher teacher salaries, better schools, more computers, more physical education. And I think people are kind of waiting. I think the American people, I've been very impressed at how alert they are to what's really going on in Washington. And, you know, if they don't really see some sort of progress both in improving their local schools and improving health care and assistance for elderly with their health care problems, you know, that approval rating is going to evaporate very quickly.
George, you're ticking through a list of issues which aren't on the front page of the strategist's plan book at this point, when you're talking about education, when you're talking about Medicare, when you're talking about prescription drugs. So far, it's been the president and the war on terror and or the economy. Are you suggesting that the other issues should be included?
I've been very dismayed that the Democrats haven't addressed these issues. I mean, these are real sort of bread and butter day-to-day issues. I'm a physician, and I deal with elderly people, and, you know, they're coming in making those decisions about, do I buy food or do I buy my drugs?
Right.
I mean, this is a real problem that, you know, if you're not elderly, you've got elderly parents, and they're dealing with these issues. And people are very aware of this, and they look to Washington, and they see nothing happening from the Democrats or the Republicans. And I think, you know, there's a real perception, the polling has recently indicated, that President Bush is much more in touch with, you know, big insurance companies and pharmaceutical industries than he is with the problems of, you know, the consumer. And you're right, it's not on the front page, but, you know, once as I noticed on my local paper, you know, there wasn't anything on Afghanistan on the front page. You know, it's that huge news story is going to quickly be relegated to the back page, and people are going to be back wondering how they're going to, you know, how their kids are doing in their local schools and how they're going to pay for their drugs and their problems in health care and, of course, Medicare and then Social Security. And the deficit spending is a huge problem because people are looking at it and saying, and all these predictions about, you know, Social Security is going to go bankrupt. I'm a baby boomer, and, you know, when I get up there, you know, is there going to be anything there for me?
George, I want to take one of the points that you raised and ask Alexis Simmendinger to speak about it, because you said earlier on that the voters in this midterm election year are a whole lot more engaged with the issues. I mean, we're talking about soldiers overseas, a war, all the memories of September 11th, economic issues where people on our own street are losing their jobs. And I guess, Alexis, I'm wondering whether or not it's seen that way in Washington, that after years of people being somewhat dismissive of their federal politicians, they are more engaged this time around.
Well, war tends to focus your attention on Washington, that's for sure. I think what we found after September 11th is that a lot of the issues that were being talked about beforehand faded because they seemed so small in comparison to the idea that the United States was attacked and what were we going to do about it. So to that extent, the voters and the American public are paying a lot of attention to what's happening in Washington in terms of, can you make me feel more secure? Can you make me feel safer? Can you assure me that we're not going to be attacked again? And all variations thereof. What the Democrats are hoping to do, at least from my reading of Senator Daschle and Dick Gephardt in the House, is focus the American public's attention on security in the context of these other domestic issues. I think they're betting that the American public will shift because of the economy and because of George's belief that the war will fade from the front pages, focus the public's attention on security in a different way, that is, your schools, your health care, et cetera. The president is betting that his discussion of homeland security and the economy will be sufficient to persuade the American public that what has happened, for instance, to the surplus, or the fact that he's going to hold the line on spending for some of these domestic programs will be acceptable to them, because he will say, I'm doing it for a good reason, and that is to make you feel more secure in this larger context.
All right, George, thanks.
I also think
Go ahead.
We're missing some things. Again, 72%. Of the tax cut doesn't even take place until the year 2005. If you go back and you look at why there is a deficit, it's being driven by increased spending, 4-to-1 over the tax cuts due to the recession, and 1.5 due to increased spending. They're about ready to sign a bill into law that is an 8% increase on education, which is 5% more than any of the other areas in the budget. So they are focusing on education. And if we can ever get this economic stimulus package through, it has two things kind of hidden in it that hasn't been talked as much. One is helping out in terms of those that have lost their health care, and whether you look at the presidents, the Democrats in Congress, or the Republicans in Congress, their proposals all include something addressing that. It also covers some of the shortfall on Medicare that states are suffering from out there because of legislation that was passed a year before last, and trying to make up that shortfall because of the economic situation. These are all things that comes back to a basic standpoint. You know, we have lost some of the surplus we have because of the recession. The bottom line is we need a surplus to be able to expand in these areas, whether it's education or Medicare or fixing Social Security, right? And we're not going to have a surplus unless we have a growing economy. The bottom line is that the economy is stupid, and we have to get the economy going in order to fix these other areas.
Okay, I want to move along with our callers. 1-800-423-8255. George, thanks for your call to Morganton, North Carolina. Paul, you're on The Connection.
Hi, and good morning, everybody.
Hi.
One of the things that I've listened to some of the Democratic comments over this past week regarding the economy, and certainly during the end of the Clinton administration with the collapse of the dot-coms, and that's really that did begin the downward slide, and I don't hear a whole lot of discussion about that. But regarding what I'm looking for from our leaders, I'm looking for somebody who is going to protect our country. A lot of the things that were being discussed in Congress before September 11th, you don't hear a whole lot of discussion anymore on them. We're looking to really see our police force and others, to the FBI, to protect us.
So, Paul, when you look for a party that's going to speak to that, I mean, you have two choices. You have a president whose record over the last 3 or 4 months is, by all reviews, pretty good, and you have the majority leader in the Senate, Daschle, saying we need to spend more on protecting the country.
Well, I don't. The way you put it, I don't know that I necessarily would agree with that. It's the way that the money is spent. I'm certainly comfortable with what President Bush has done. And here in North Carolina, we've seen a lot of businesses that have a lot of jobs lost. The textile business has really been destroyed. So I'm looking for somebody who is going to be creating jobs. And I traditionally have looked towards Republicans as being the party that's more successful in that area, as opposed to, granted, I was very happy to get my check, but I'm also...
You mean the tax break?
Yes.
Yeah.
I like to see a party who is going to be looking to nurture and grow jobs.
You know, Mark Penn, what we're hearing from North Carolina doesn't sound very good for your party. You know, people are still aware of the fact that they got a check from the government, and when it comes to, you know, searching for a party that at least Paul wants to create jobs, he's looking at the Republicans.
Well, what I heard from both these callers was pretty good. I mean, first, really, this caller is looking for somebody who's going to create jobs, and I think part of what the Daschle speech and what Democrats will be doing is saying, hey, 24 million jobs were created during the last 8 years. 2 million have been lost already, going back to the same kind of pattern that you had of deficits and job losses that you had before President Clinton came into office. The whole new economy, although it had some problems, was shepherded through, you know, by Democrats. And you see somebody, you know, both Hillary ran on the new economy message in upstate New York, and both in Virginia, we saw that Governor Warner there ran on that kind of message. So that message, I think, is going to play very successfully for Democrats. And what you also saw the previous caller, since we've returned to deficits, people are going to say, what about Social Security? What about Medicare? What about prescription drugs? What about the things that I know that a Democrat is a lot more likely to be sensitive to than a Republican? I think, you know, for the last couple of months, voters have really just been able to handle the war. Are they safe? And as you point out, Democrats actually want to spend more on domestic safety than the president and the Republicans, and I think this is a fact that isn't well known and is surprising to a lot of people, as I think it was surprising to this caller. And third, you know, what's happening with our economy? I think some of these other issues will come into play as the war ramps down here over time, and economy is number one, but also this deficit in education and Medicare and the environment, they come in there as reasons to vote for Democrats. And that's how I think this is playing out.
Paul, that's the voice of the strategist with the Democratic Party. Are you persuaded?
Well, actually, a big chunk of that sounded like scare tactics, which I've heard from some of the Democrats time and time again. It's every time they go against Social Security, but they don't want to cut our taxes. I've heard that line before, and throwing money or spending more money doesn't guarantee quality. It's the same thing we talked about education. You want to pay more to teachers, and I don't mind doing that, but I also want to go with somebody who's going to hold the results accountable. And if
Paul, just a quick last question to you. As we head into the year, does the message, the noise, the words from the politicians, is it any different than it's been in years past? Are you paying
certainly
more?
Not from the Democrats. I think that the Republican President Bush really held back, and I was very impressed with that. And I guess it was in New Jersey. He could have come out and campaigned for some of the candidates, but he was very quiet on that. And I think that I like that. I want to see our politicians not be political. And what I'm hearing from this gentleman here is a down the line Democratic. It's not a rational or balanced discussion.
There is a puzzle that you've got for us, though, Paul, how you can be a politician and not be political at the same time. Thanks for calling in. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. But I think Paul puts his finger on what it is people are expecting or hoping to hear from the politicians in the midterm election year, something that they think cuts through the rhetoric. And how do the strategists, how do the pollsters figure out a way of doing that? 1-800-423-8255. My name's Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. You're listening to The Connection on National Public Radio. Our telephone number to join our conversation talking about the early days of a midterm election year, 1-800-423-8255. My three guests, Ed Goest, he's a strategist with the Republican Party, Mark Penn, strategist with the Democratic Party, and Alexis Simondinger, a White House correspondent, with the National Journal. And Alexis, we have to talk about it wasn't an announcement, but news from Washington yesterday from the political advisor to the president, Karl Rove, that the president's going to be making an economic address in some way separate from his State of the Union address at the end of the month. I read that and thought to myself, now that's a smart piece of strategy. Take all the questionable or bad news, separate it from all the achievements of the past 4 months, and it's got to play better, doesn't it? Is that what's behind it?
One of the more recent innovations in Washington is to try to work your way up to the State of the Union address, which this year will be January 29th, by doing what people at the White House call rollouts. You try to splinter out individual pieces of what you're going to talk about. And as you point out, if your presentation on the economy is not necessarily going to be all great news, one of the benefits is you get a chance as the president to focus entirely on that one topic and basically tell the American public, you know, I care. I'm paying a lot of attention to the economy, and here is my separate presentation of my ideas on the economy. Because when he talks about State of the Union, the president will be talking a lot about security and the war and moving ahead on the economy in a separate way. And he'll have, as you know, State of the Unions are this grab bag of individual proposals that get cobbled together. So it does make a lot of sense, but I would argue that the president's already starting to do this. He's obviously leading the public up to the idea that his budget presentation is not going to be about surplus. He's going to have to argue why, and why his budget presentation, which will probably be February 4th, will showcase a lot of the proposals that were held over from this current fiscal year that were not enacted by Congress, and he wants to reprise what he calls his economic stability or security package. It used to be stimulus. So it makes a lot of sense, and it's actually not unheard of.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. If you'd like to join the conversation, Alexis is with us as our strategist and pollsters with two of the parties. Dave is calling in from Amherst, Massachusetts. Hi, Dave.
Hi. I appreciate Alexis's segue to my question, because I've got maybe a different vantage point being outside the political system. And from my background, I don't, in general, hear from the political system the questions, and even the media, the questions I want answered, and even worse, I don't get the answers that I'm interested very often. Now, with all deference to your current guests, I think sometimes the media suffers from presenting only what is presented to them by the candidates. For instance, they will report on the economy, as Alexis was referring to at the end of the month, because there is a conference there, not because it's, and thereby helping the lead into the State of the Union address.
Well, you can ask all the questions you want, Dave.
Okay.
But when the president, I'm not taking issue with you, but I'm saying when, you know, the president comes to Boston as he's doing today, and the topic of his speech is education, people report on what the president has to say about education. To that extent, the politicians will always have a certain amount of control over their own agenda.
Well, that's actually the heart of my question, because I'm not sure how much really is up to the president, and Karl Rove is a great example. And I actually wanted to ask all three guests to respond because of their different perspectives,
right,
as to how much of the decisions are really made by the candidates and how much are made by the consultants. For instance, Karl Rove, much has been written about his apparent control behind the scenes in the White House, and I'm sure that varies from politician to politician, but I'd
love
to.
Do you mean special interest groups, or do you mean pollsters? Do you mean people like Ed and Mark who are going to their leadership and saying, look, this is what I'm hearing, this is what people are saying, this is what I think you should concentrate on?
That's a good addition. I think probably I'd like to hear wherever they think the power and the decisions get made.
Mark Penn, I'm going to get you to start on that. There's a tone of suspicion in Dave's call about who's really making the decisions here.
Well, you know, the president calls the shots, and that's true, I think, in any White House. It certainly was true in the Clinton White House. And I think every president, I always put it, every president's got to consult on every policy a number of desks. And, you know, you've got to consult the political desk. You've got to consult the professional policymaker desk to see whether they think this policy will help or hurt. You're going to cover the legislative desk to see if it's going to be able to pass. And you're going to cover the desk, the public opinion desk, to see how people will respond to it. So you've got three or four desks that every president's got to consult with to see how can he get his policy through, how can he articulate it. Clearly, you're seeing today an example of Bush going to Boston, meet with Ted Kennedy to show some bipartisanship on both sides around education. You know, a lot of strategy went into that, but ultimately the president had to decide whether or not, you know, he approved of this policy or not. But that's the kind of decision making that goes on, and the more I saw it, it was a very impressive process in which just to get every policy really is so well thought through that I think a lot of people focus on us. And, you know, we're one of the desks, but we're by far not the only desk. And every policy is very, very well thought through in terms of what kind of impact it's going to have, not just politically, but on real people, and how's it going to affect them, and how's it going to help or not.
Ed Goes, quickly from you, once that notion or thought or piece of policy has made it past public opinion, legislative policy, political, is it still the leader's idea?
Yeah, I mean, every leader comes with two things, a set of principles about what the role of government should be and how they want to manage that role, and second, a set of priorities in terms of issues they want to pay attention to. Basically, all we do is help fine-tune it to, number one, make sure that their message is getting through on what they want to set priorities on and talk about, and number two, that people are hearing it the way that it is meant. And so bringing focus to the debate is what we do, as opposed to setting what the debate is in the first place.
All right, David, thanks for your call. 1-800-423-8255 puts you on the connection to Raleigh, North Carolina. Bob is on the line. Hi, Bob.
Hi. I'm going to harken back to something, a comment that was made a little while back about the president's refusal, and God knows why, but his refusal to approve a paltry, I think it was something like about $15 billion in Homeland Security spending in the budget.
Did you say paltry?
Yeah, well, these days, paltry, my God.
I'm sorry, I still see a billion. I never call it paltry, but go on.
Well, yeah, but I mean, as I say, considering what's been done, what's being done these days, and when one talks of trillion this and trillion, yeah. trillion that. Anyway, but it was not approved, and the media didn't seem to pick up on it in a great way. The Democrats didn't seem to push it as much as they might have. I think there's been some kind of compromise on it, but I think the Democrats really ought to use it as a great big club in the upcoming elections to say that the president can give a lot of money away to the airlines, who ought to have sharpened up their act a long time before now. And the standard Republican rebuttal will be, you can't throw money at a problem. Well, there's been lots of basic research that could have been done over the years if the money had been there on anthrax, for example, the
right.
effects of anthrax, all kinds of things.
Bob, let's let Mark Penn in on this, because I mean, it's an interesting point that you're raising, and I wonder whether or not it isn't a little bit of political quicksand, Mark, for leaders at this particular point to say that this money in Homeland Security was well spent, but this one wasn't. I mean, you end up setting people against each other in a way, don't you?
Well, you know, again, I think, you know, the caller's right. It was kind of puzzling that the Bush administration held up this aid. I don't know how it will be resolved in the coming months. He may just be trying to come up with his own proposals in the State of the Union, and so he was playing a little game here. But there's no question that Americans, you know, want greater safety. They know a lot of money was spent on the airlines, but nothing appears to have been spent on the trains. They know that they want a lot more security in terms of public health. They know that they want to know if there are bioterrorism attacks, that we have a system in place that's able to handle these things, and that they have coverage for them. And a lot of those questions are left completely, you know, unaddressed. Now, maybe he's going to try to fill it in, but it was puzzling that he held off on that during a period of what is supposed to be bipartisanship.
All right, let's go to another call. Dave, thanks. We're going to Jim calling in from Lincoln, Mass. Hi, Jim.
Let me make a couple of observations, and first of all, put those in perspective. I am a software engineer.
Yeah.
I've lost my job during this period of recession. I heard the Daschle speech last week, and I actually thought it was a lunatic. In the speech, he made the following points. He suggested, no, he didn't suggest, he actually said that the economic condition of the United States is worse than it was during the Great Depression. That was the comparison that he made. And the other point that he made that I found it lunatic, was that his addressing the surplus as and its potential loss as a bad thing in wartime finance. You know, I look at this, and I just can't understand where he's going, coming from, where he's going to, and where he intends to lead the Democratic Party. Maybe you guys want to talk about it.
Alexis, why don't you start on that one?
Well, this caller is the kind of caller that President Bush loves and is hoping there are many more of, because he's basically saying that he doesn't buy the argument that Daschle is making, that he's not ready to blame the president or Republicans for any of the things that Daschle is suggesting having to do with policies related to tax cutting. So that is the proposition that the president hopes will carry lots and lots of the public. And one of the other interesting things, and I think probably Ed can talk about this a little bit, is the public's perception of Tom Daschle. You know, we were talking about the public's attention on Washington. Right now, President Bush, as most presidents do, has command of the bully pulpit, but he also has a tremendous amount of the public's attention. And he is the center of gravity. Like it or not, White Houses tend to be the center of gravity for policy and the public's perception of government. So he has a lot of capital he can use, and right now the White House is debating how to use that effectively. And Tom Daschle's at a disadvantage because he is a spokesman for the Democratic Party, but when you lose the White House, as Mark knows, you lose a lot. And so his public profile or the resonance of what he says is far less than what President Bush can offer.
So Ed, take the sentiment that Jim brought to the conversation and explain how you think President Bush can make that last or stick that through the midterm election year.
Well, again, I think the problem isn't him making it stick. The problem is the members underneath him being able to tie into that, because just because he has high job approval rating, both on overall managing the war, managing the economy, doesn't mean that the individual members are going to be able to hold up. I think, unfortunately, what we're seeing in this phone call is many people are seeing through this thinly veiled attempt by Daschle to create a contrast, to start to chip away. There was
he's
a
got
memo
to do that. That's politics, right?
It is. And that's why I say he got the short straw. There's going to be some information coming out. I can't give the exact data today, but I think you'll see it reflected in some polls that Daschle is the one that's probably going to take a big hit in terms of his approval rating, in terms of his favorability rating. I think the problem with Daschle getting the short straw is he's out there arguing something that, in fact, doesn't make sense. That, in fact, he did have 12 of his Democratic senators vote for the tax cut. He did have 41 members, Democrat members of the House, vote for the tax cut. That the tax cut only accounts for 15% of the loss of the surplus. The rest comes from the recession, the war, and increased spending. And so him going after that and trying to draw that contrast just doesn't ring true and looks like politics as usual when you have a president that two-thirds of the voters are saying that he has changed the tone in Washington, that you have three out of four voters saying that he has done a good job reaching across the aisle to the Democrats and including what they want, that you had an economic stimulus package that had a majority of the senators, including some Democrats, wanting to vote for it in December, and Daschle wouldn't bring it to the floor. He has been the obstructionist here, and yet he's trying to point the finger at George W. Bush.
Well,
it's
going to be interesting
play.
Over the next few months to see whether or not that perspective holds true or whether or not it is, in fact, as Ed's suggesting, politics as usual. But fascinating time. Thanks to all of you for joining me. Alexis Simondinger is White House correspondent for the National Journal. Ed Goas is Republican pollster and campaign strategist with the Terrence Group. And Mark Penn, Democratic campaign strategist with Penn, Schoen, and Berland. You're listening to The Connection on National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon.